What it takes to get food from the farm level all the way to a grocery store or to a restaurant just doesn't happen overnight. So I think we're at a point where people start to have a greater appreciation for procurement.
Hello, you're listening to the Purdue Agricultural Economics Podcast. I'm Ken Foster, professor here in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Purdue University, and with me is my student co-host, Shelby Whitaker. Shelby, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, hey. I know it's going to all be over and we'll be done celebrating by the time this podcast goes live, but I hear you're headed to Phoenix tomorrow.
I am, and I'm super excited. Wow. Got an early flight, so hoping once I get back, I'll be celebrating a national championship win with the basketball team, but
boiler up.
We'll see. Boiler up for sure.
Wow, yeah, you know, hey, I tell everybody I was here as a student in 1980 when we went to the Final Four the last time, and I remember being just a kid in 1969, the time before that. Both times we got knocked out by UCLA. Hey, UCLA's not in the contest this year, so that's a good sign. So, hey, well, you have a wonderful time. I hope that goes well, and even if we don't win, have a great time.
Yes.
Hey, you want to introduce our guest?
Absolutely. So today we have James Joshua. He serves as the Vice President of Procurement at Diversified Foods and Seasonings, overseeing food and packaging expenses. He is the winner of the Marine Stewardship Council MSC Ocean Hero Award for his support and bringing awareness to the sustainably sourced Filet-O-Fish at McDonald's. He graduated from Purdue with a master's degree in agricultural economics in 2004 and currently serves on the Purdue Ag Alumni Board, as well as previously served on the Purdue Dean of Agricultural Advisory Council. James was recently awarded the Purdue AgEcon Apex Award. So the Apex Award was presented by the Department of Agricultural Economics, and it is in recognition of those individuals with a strong connection to the department who have made outstanding contributions in their fields, and it is the highest honor given by the department and represents the convergence of all accomplishments in the lives of our honorees. So congratulations, James, and thank you for being with us here today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So your career has spanned various roles and prestigious roles within the procurement industry, like Diversified Foods and Seasonings, McDonald's Corp, Restaurant Supply Chain Solution. So what initially drew you to the procurement side in the food industry, and how has your journey kind of evolved over the years?
Yeah, very good question. And it's kind of taken, it's never been a straight line journey to where I'm at today. And I'm probably give you a little bit of a long-winded answer how I even ended up in ag in the first place. So born and raised Southside Chicago. So as you can imagine, it's not a lot of farms in Southside Chicago. But I had an uncle at the time. I was a high school student, and I was looking in a lot of the, back then it's probably before your time, but they used to be these real thick publications, the U.S. News publications. And they talked about emerging careers for the next 5 to 10 years. So as you're going into college, to make sure, just kind of like a watch out to say, okay, these industries are going to be in a, continue to be high demand, or they're going to slow down. And I always knew I was a business-minded person, but I wanted to put a twist or some niche on a business degree. So my uncle, both sides of my family's from Arkansas. My uncle's in the agricultural field, and he said, why don't you go into ag business management? And I laughed at it. I'm like, right, it's a similar laugh that you have. And I said, I didn't grow up on a farm. I know nothing about agriculture whatsoever. He said, relax. He said, they're going to, instead of talking about widgets and econ class, you can talk about grain markets, other agricultural-type products. And it's the same degree you get in econ or a general management background or school. And I said, okay, I'll try that out and I'll think about it. And I was leaning toward initially computer science, because computer science at the time was a hot, exciting field. All this demand, good paying salary, all those things that attract the young 16-year-old to want to go to college. And so another thing that I want to combine with that, I wanted to go to school in the Southeast. At the time, the Southeast was really place to go, different than Chicago. A lot of my friends and family went to school in the states nearby, so I wanted something different, to be honest with you. And so I went down to Alabama A&M. They had both degrees. They had computer science and they had an ag department. That was really good. And went to computer science, went to like the 101, and I was like, this is not for me. It really just didn't pique my interest. It was fine. And then I went over to the ag department, and I literally said, hey, I'm thinking about majoring in ag business management. I was got the opportunity to meet with the dean of agriculture that day on the spot. And I met with all the professors, a lot of top professors in the department. And from a person that's coming from Chicago at the time, was very introverted, shy person at the time, they opened up the doors. It was like a family atmosphere. And I was like, this feels right. This feels about right. And so I started talking about the curriculum, potential majors, and it just all appealed to me at that point. Fast forward, I'm going to skip through undergrad at that point. So I finished Alabama A&M, looking for graduate school. I always knew I wanted to get my master's degree in ag business, ag econ. So looking around for the top universities, of course, Purdue's top of that list when you look for your master's degree. And again, same situation. I called up to the university. You remember Lou Ann Baugh? She was the entry point when you called into the university. Just ask general questions, right? And again, just made me feel at home. She answered all my redundant, random questions, you know, a person would ask at that time, and with just ease and just perfect grace. And I came into the university to visit, and again, felt like home, right? And went through, finished my first year here at AggieCon department. It was not a cakewalk, but it was a really good education, right? Your first year here in the master's program at Purdue. While I was there, while I was finished up that first year, Luann again reached out to me and said, hey, Kraft Foods is having an internship where it was like a co-op, they call it, where you do 6 months, so you take a whole semester off. Mm-hmm. Which you can imagine, most people don't want to do that, because if you're that far into your master's program, you want to kind of get your thesis done and move on, right? But the Kraft had an internship in the dairy risk management department, so they would rotate every semester. They would pull people from ag departments across the country, and you would do a co-op for a semester, whether it be in the meat department, dairy department, they had other departments. Kraft was really huge at the time. And it was in Glenview, Illinois, close to home back to Chicago. So it was like a win-win.
Sure.
So I finished up the classwork, but I did my internship at Kraft Foods, and it was one of the best experiences of my career. At the time, they had the top dairy policymakers. You can literally write next door down the top policymakers in dairy for the whole country and globally. To some of the top buyers, some of the people that worked in the manufacturing plants and worked their way up to corporate. So anything you want to know, dairy or cheese, craft related or any industry, they were in that building. Mm-hmm. And it gave me the real life exposure to what I want to do and what path I want to take in my career. And that's when it really hit home for me. Okay, procurement / supply chain, which every company is titled differently, but procurement is where I want to go next. So I came back, finished my thesis with Dr. Ackrich, and went into the food industry on the procurement side. And that's how I got started and been in love with it ever since. Can't get out of it. So
that's amazing. How in the world did your uncle know that that was the place?
That was the best advice I've ever gotten in my entire life to this day, right? And he, because I guess he was just talking, and he was always a big advocate of agriculture. He was like, we need more people in agriculture, more young people. He was an advocate of it in the early ages of getting more people in agriculture and understand where food comes from. And I think it's getting back to that now. I feel like it's becoming a hot trend again. Sure. But there is a period of time, you probably know this too, where probably a couple of decades where ag wasn't as attractive or sexy field to get into. So you had a lot of people, they may be in the ag business department, but they really was trying to angle toward a business or another department or another industry in general. And I think ag is finally getting its place and its respect in the industry again.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's amazing how, you know, one person can change your life like that. And sometimes you don't even know if you're that person. You don't realize you're doing that when you're doing it. But that's really cool. I hope you tell him.
Yeah, I do tell him all the time. And I saw him last summer, actually, and we was having dinner. And they said, how did you get in that field? And I pointed to my uncle. He was having dinner. I was like, he's the one that kind of planted that seed.
That's great. I also don't come from like an ag background. So when I told my family, because I kind of found it with our 4-H local agency and things like that, but they were like, why do you want to go into agriculture? Nobody in our family's in agriculture. But now they see, and my sister came to Purdue this year and she's studying agriculture. Awesome. So it's kind of opened those doors. So I love hearing stories like that. Could you share some more insights into some of the challenges and opportunities you've encountered while overseeing initiatives within these large global food chains?
I would say the first thing is, and this goes for any industry, change management. Mm-hmm. So if people have been doing things a certain way for 10 years, a number of decades, and things seem relatively going well, why are we changing? Why are we listening to, some people may make the comment, why are we listening to the 1 or 2 percenters, right? Why are we changing our whole business model to appease to this small group or entity, right? Why do we have to do this? So just even trying to move a large organization is very difficult, right? Because people are set in their ways and they do not want to change, and they may not see the benefit that could be coming from this 10, 5, because you may not even see the fruits of the change or going a different course for 10 years sometimes 20 years. These organizations are large. And to make a small change at a McDonald's or US Foods, for example, or some of these other organizations, Yum, there takes a long time to make that change within the organization or to get the raw material to make the finished product and whatever initiative you're trying to achieve. So
maybe my next question kind of piggybacks on that. I mean, you've been recognized quite a bit for some of the things that you've done with respect to sustainability. I noticed that you received the Marine Stewardship Council Ocean Award for your work on sustainably sourced fillet of fish at McDonald's. And just, you know, what inspired you to make that move towards more sustainable food products and get focused on sustainability in that kind of big food environment?
Right. And to be clear, a lot of the work was done years before with a lot of great people really internally with their McDonald's really pushed for that to change and to be more sustainable in how we source our food and make sure we have traceability programs in place. So there's a lot of great work that was done and a lot of team members before I got there. But the biggest thing was really just trying to continue to advocate on how can we promote fish. It's a really good sustainable product that McDonald's has and how they have the traceability and so on and so forth. And so how do we get more awareness about that out there in the marketplace? And when people think about McDonald's, sustainability may not be top of mind for certain people. And then to have a product like the fillet of fish that is sustainably sourced, there's great information about it, great traceability programs in place. That's a good story that that McDonald's and other people need to continue to tell out there, that these large organizations can make change and impact the environment overall.
Kind of diving a little bit deeper into that, can you discuss a little bit more about the importance of these new innovations in food procurement, especially regarding kind of the sourcing, sustainability, being cost efficient, and along those lines within a company?
Well, I think we're at a pivot point in agriculture and food and procurement overall. Historically, we've been doing things, these supply chains have been set up for, again, decades and how they source things and even how procurement functions. Procurement traditionally in general has always been set up as, I always call procurement and supply chain the offensive lineman of the business, right? Where you go in there, you negotiate with the vendors, suppliers, or the producers to get the most competitively priced item. You make sure it shows up, and the rest of the business, they might not say this to you directly, but you get the feeling like, just stay in your place, right? Just make sure you get the product there competitively priced, and to make sure it shows up on time and not late, right? And just kind of stay out of sight, out of mind, right? Now, if there's a problem, that's when procurement can be in the front lines. That's when you get a lot of attention, just like offensive lineman. You get a penalty, you're in the front lines of the issue. Well, I think today, especially with COVID, I think has brought out is that procurement can be an enabler of business. And I think a lot of executives that have not had exposure to procurement, supply chains, or agriculture in general, it was kind of out of sight, out of mind. But during COVID, if you didn't have that ingredient to make your product, if you didn't have the product that arrived on the shelf, if you didn't have the product at the restaurant, that's a big deal because that's a revenue loss. You're losing revenue and money, and you can't grow your business. And so I think it brought a lot of attention, COVID did, in a positive way to the great work that procurement, supply chain does day in and day out, and what it takes to get food from the farm level all the way to a grocery store or to a restaurant. It just doesn't happen overnight. So I think we're at a point where people are starting to have a greater appreciation for procurement, and also the fact that, going back to my point around enabling the business, being able to support the growth. If you have growth initiatives, how are you going to achieve that? Do you have relationships with producers? If you're going to make a sustainability claim, if you're going to make an organic claim, if you're going to make any type of claim, do you have a source in a relationship with those producers and the suppliers to make that come to life every single day? So that's why it's going to be really important, the way that supply chain and procurement is going to start to pivot in the future going forward. It's going to be really interesting dynamic that we see in the next, I think, 5 to 10 years, for sure.
Absolutely.
So maybe digging a little bit deeper into that, James, you know, we see a lot of new technologies kind of emerging that have potential applications in supply chains. So, you know, blockchain, artificial intelligence, even just our ability to accumulate and evaluate and analyze data at right. larger scale. Where do you see that going in terms of its application or its impact on procurement and sourcing, sustainability?
Yeah, I think I think AI and blockchain have a huge opportunity within the agriculture and procurement space. being able to have better visibility around the risk further back in your supply chain, whether that be an ingredient, a key component of making your finished product or assembling an item, understanding that risk, understand the price, the impact of that risk, forming better relationship, a stronger relationship with your supply chain partners, driving inefficiencies out, driving cost out of the process, because you may be surprised, you may think everything is working perfectly today, but come to find out that you have a lot of inefficiencies in your supply chain process today. So I think AI and blockchain are going to give better visibility to de-risk and give you quicker insights to any risks in your supply chain, as well as drive costs and inefficiencies out over time.
Hey, somebody might be hearing some noise in the background. Just to let you know, we have some construction going on here in the Craner building, so you may occasionally hear some pounding, drilling, sawing, or whatever. Please, we apologize for the noise. Yet, following back on, you know, this idea of blockchain and electronic ledgers and things like this, I remember reading something somewhere where Maersk, the big international shipper, had identified that in some of their international shipping markets, the cost of demurrage and delays and so forth with respect to paper ledgers to move a product out of the port was greater than the actual physical cost of transferring the product across the ocean.
I can believe that.
And just, you know, just an incredible potential, whether you call it blockchain or electronic ledger or whatever you want to call it, is the tremendous potential to reduce costs seems incredible. I guess just maybe another question is, is it possible to take some of this too far in terms of having, you know, digital contracts that don't give people enough leeway to be good partners, in the sense that, you know, just talking to people in the produce industry, they tell me, you know, there's always times when both parties, farmer and retailer, would like to get out of the contract. And so having a contract that's flexible, that's not locked into a data chain, is maybe more desirable.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I've run into that a lot. So I ran into a lot during COVID, right? And that's a very good point, where you have a contract, and if you read the letter of the law verbatim, this is how things should work, and there's no wiggle room. To your point, if you have excess supply, how do you get out of that contract so you don't take that financial hit, and vice versa? If you're a producer, where do I go with these goods? It's a perishable item, right? It's not going to last. I can't sit on it for 3 months, right? I have to move it pretty quickly, and it devalues that product, and I'm at a loss, right? So as being partners, what's fair, right? And I think that's where it goes back to my point around relationships. And that's one of the key components that I think we do have to be careful of with some of these systems, is do you lose that human touch and the human element of having a relationship and making sure it's a win-win in a partnership? There's going to be some times where it may seem like I'm winning in abundance. There may be times you're winning in abundance, but how do we have a fair agreement to make sure that we're having a conversation on a regular basis, to make sure we're fairly being treated on both sides of the fence? Because again, if you start making any sustainability claims or any unique claims in how your product is being sourced or what have you, you have to have long-term partnership with the grower community to make sure the product is being, the seed is being bought, is being planted, you know what you're going to expect from that harvest or a rough estimate. And so you can't just switch vendors in and year out. So you got to have some type of fluidity in that conversation, that contract. Now, the contract should have some overall framework and guardrails of how to manage the relationships, but you still have to pick up the phone and make sure people are being treated fairly. If not, there could be a potential that supply partner is not there 2 years from now, financially insolvent.
Yep.
Then what? Then you have no product to sell to a customer.
Yep.
So you always got to make sure you rebalance and make sure you have a healthy conversation, a strong relationship with your partners throughout the supply chain.
Absolutely. I would be interested to know if, besides like the technology, is there any other future trends or even disruptors that you kind of think are going to hit the landscape of the food industry? And if so, how can professionals start to prepare for them?
I have my own theory on a couple of things, and so they may be a little wild, but I think this health sector and food is going to start to merge closer and closer together, right? You're seeing, you know, a number of companies that are going down the weight loss avenue. I think people are going to continue down that path, or they're going to start to find food solutions for some of those issues as well. Heart disease, understanding people's blood type. I mean, there's books out there that's been written years ago, but understanding what's ideal for your blood type or your body type or what you're trying to achieve, and how does the food segment play into that, right? Or if you're just trying to get an energy source and you're trying to work out, right? Is there a certain energy or a certain type of foods that fit your profile that help achieve what goals you want for your health, right? I think that trend has to start to bubble up a little bit more in the next 5 or 10 years. That's one area, in my opinion, that's going to play out more. So
great. Maybe just kind of switching directions here a little bit. We hope that we have a lot of students listening to our podcast. What advice would you have for students or even, you know, recent graduates, young professionals that are looking to pursue a career in procurement within the food industry?
I would say, number one, I think it's a really exciting time for procurement because there's so many things you could do within procurement, and you could touch on, and it's, a lot of students or people ask me, what's a typical day? There is no such thing as a typical day, really. You literally could be one day or in the same day talking about policy issues, what's going on politically with something that's going on in a particular country that's a big exporter of a commodity. So you need to know the political landscape. Depending on the organization, currency has a big impact as well, too, because again, if you're exporting and importing that commodity into that country, currency has a big play in as well. So you need to understand political aspects going on, currency, what's marketing trends with consumers, what's going on there as well. So there's a number of things you have to learn day in and day out from a procurement standpoint. Really hone in on some of the soft skills as well too, right? Because I would just go back to Purdue. I know Purdue is a really good education, does a really good job from a technical standpoint. And generally, those people don't do well on the soft skills. They're not the best communicators, generally. Not everyone, but generally. And I put myself in that camp when I was younger. So I would say really do well in communicating. And that's verbal and written communication. Because you're going to be put in a position where, when you come out of Purdue in particular, generally, you're going to be the top 5 or 10% from the subject matter expert. What's going to separate you from that entry point to the mid-management and leadership is some of these soft skills. It really is what's going to take you to the next level and separate you from your peers in that organization or just in the industry in general. The second thing is around conflict resolution. I know there, when we had the Dean Advisory Board, one of the things that came out of that was for students to get into conflict resolution. Because again, that's really important as you move through your career as well too, to your earlier question around sustainability. There could be a group of people within your own organization that's resistant to sustainability or whatever the initiative is, right? It's different, right? Why are we doing this? So being able to meet at the table cross-functionally as a team and to be able to present your position and your stance and why we need to go in this direction versus what we historically done, how do you communicate that without getting into an argument, right? Or downgrading people, right? So how do you deal with conflict resolution? How do you manage that situation? So conflict resolution is the other thing. Empathy, I think the more empathy, understanding where people are coming from, their perspective, they may be different than how we grew up or how we view the world or how we view a subject, but not to minimize what they're thinking about and having empathy and bringing that into play into the team dynamic is really important.
I think that's all really great advice and a lot to take away from there. So thank you for that. Also, kind of going back to some of your experiences that you're involved in currently, you're a member of the Purdue Ag Alumni Board. So what kind of inspired you to get back involved with that and continue to stay involved with alumni activities here on campus?
Well, first, it's just an honor just to be thought of and just invited back to anything at Purdue, right? So anything, whether it be the Dean Council or Alumni Council, just an honor for me. So anytime I can give back to the university and give back to students and any wisdom and help you get to where you need to go quicker than I did or just pass on the benefits I got from other people, internships here, I'm all for it. So anytime people call up and say, can you speak or do anything, I'm all for it because I just love giving back to the students. And similar to what my uncle did for me, we need more and more students get into the ag field with different backgrounds. And if you can supplement that or add on the education you achieve at Purdue, it just makes you that much more golden. We need more of these people like yourselves entering into the fields, and whether it be sustainability or procurement, supply chain, marketing, whatever it is within food and in the agricultural space. That's why I'm always passionate about giving back, because we need to get more and more people excited about the field and getting into the field, and anything we could do to support the student body, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. And all the students, I think I can speak for many of them, is we all appreciate having alumni to rely on and have that support system has been really incredible, especially in my experience at Purdue.
Yes, awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, over the years, often when I'd intersect with James here on campus, he was back recruiting employees for whoever he was working for at the time. So I know this guy has been very loyal to Purdue. It's been great talking with you, and congratulations again on the Apex Award.
Thank you.
We're really proud of you and everything that you've done and everything that you've given back to Purdue over the years. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, you've been listening to the Purdue Agricultural Economics Podcast. You can visit the department at www.agecon.purdue.edu. You can like us on Facebook, and you can follow us on X, formerly Twitter. Have a great day. And boiler up!